what worship is. It's not for us to decide what is what pleases the Lord. It's up to the Lord, isn't it? It's down to Him. If it pleases Him, then it pleases Him. And He's been pleased to let us know what pleases Him, which is a blessing, isn't it? That God communicates to us and lets us know what He wants of us. And here we have, if you just do a little survey of the, it's not a long chapter, but you can see, let me just split it down. Even the NIV's got the first three verses together in a little paragraph there. You can see that. And in that paragraph, we've got the introduction to the subject. It's followed on from chapter 1, which is all about the burnt offerings. And burnt offerings is animal sacrifices. So this is the lamb, this is the bull, this is the blood sacrifices. It's the death of a creature given in exchange for atonement. Because people have sinned and fallen short of His glory. So the blood shed guarantees a measure of forgiveness for a period of time that can be cleansed away. But then following on from that, we start to read about this. The grain offerings is something slightly different. And there are some details that are given to us with regards to these offerings. Firstly, that they have to be spiced offerings. I was quite shocked to see that there's frankincense mixed in there with the dough. I don't know how many of you would cook with frankincense. And I did wonder, actually, whether this might not be rather poisonous and toxic and not a very good idea in a way of getting rid of the priesthood. But actually, I discovered on the internet that actually it's that the pure frankincense can be ground down into fine powder and is used throughout the Middle East and the Eastern Mediterranean in all sorts of dishes, not the least of which is Turkish Delight, for example. It's part of the aromatic flavouring of things like Turkish Delight. I didn't know that. Then they put it, you won't be surprised, in bread too, all around. So clearly in its pure form, mastic, I think it forms like a chewing gum, I think, something like that. So anyway, but there it is, it's got to be in there. It's this sort of spiced bread, and it's not just that the flour, this flour has to be sort of given this extra spicing, but it has to be mixed in there, doesn't it, with oil into it kneaded. Presumably that's what you just simply would call a dough, isn't it? Those of you who've cooked like this, you know, you've got your flour and then you've mixed it with your oil, you put some spices in there. And this is not just any old flour, this is not your crude flour, this is fine flour. Isn't it lovely? Do you love the feeling of fine flour, that really, really fine powdery flour? This is what's being asked for. No rubbish, just the best. No rubbish, just the best. Refined, thoroughly ground and refined, spiced and flavored and mixed and oiled together. And then once that has been prepared, it's for sharing. It's only a portion. This is the kind of food that they would enjoy themselves, but they're to give some of what they are given by God to sustain them and to share that with the priests, who then in turn share it with the Lord. And together, everybody has their part, and it's shared out between the altar and the priests. And then from verses 4 through to 7, it tackles one or two little questions, because you can always, there's always somebody in the crowd, isn't it? But does it count if it's like this? Does it matter? You know, but what if it's like this? And here, it sort of basically heads off two or three possible questions that people might have. But is it all right if I do it in a griddle? Is it all right if I do it in a pan? Is it all right if I bake it? Yes, 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 they're all right. It doesn't matter how you cook it or how you prepare it. Basically, we're talking about as long as it's bread. We're talking about the basics of life, aren't we? Bread. Just bring your bread to the Lord, the offering to the Lord. And then, again, there's always somebody in the class who says, sorry, I didn't get that. Could you repeat it? And if you look in verse 8 through to 10, he basically goes over what he said already in the first couple of verses just to make sure that you've got it absolutely plain and clear. It's ever so helpful, isn't it? But then we get to verses 11 through to 13, and there is, I think, what used in Latin is the nota bene, isn't it? Note well, NB, note well. One or two things that were really underlined to make sure absolutely clear. Don't miss this, though. No yeast, salt every single time. Yes? You see it in there? It's absolutely categorical about it. There mustn't be any yeast. You can bring yeast, but only at the festival of first fruits. In all this, these grain offerings were to be offered every single day under all manner of circumstances, morning and evening, noontime, sin offerings, thank offerings, fellowship offerings, every single day, all through the year. no yeast. And that's the significance of honey there, if you're looking at it. Why honey? Because as you well know, honey contains yeast, right? So that's why you can't offer the honey. But at the verse 14 to 16, there's this little postscript. Yes, but you're wondering, what about this situation about first fruits? You're saying that once a year at first fruits we can do it. Yes, at first fruits it's different, because at first fruits what we're looking at is all the good things that God gives you, whether it's honey or yeast or bread or whatever it is, and you're presenting these things individually as thank offerings to God for the increase of the harvest right across your calendar. Just once a year. But for ordinarily speaking, all through the rest of the year, no yeast, always salted, and then this fine flour shared between altar and priest with the spices and the oil mixed together. And it doesn't really matter how you cook it, but just bring it along and share it. That's the overview of the passage, isn't it? So what's going on here? Why is this bread being brought along? The technical term, the Hebrew technical term, mincha. The mincha. This is the pleasing offering. It's a gift. You know, you do this all the time without realizing. Somebody invites you to their house for a meal, and what do? You usually say, "Can I bring a pudding?" Do you ever do that? Something like that. Some way of just sort of showing respect and paying tribute that somebody's actually welcoming you into their house and showing that you appreciate that. It's a way of showing your respect and your appreciation for what's going on. It's just a little gift, a little something to show that you appreciate where you've been welcomed into somebody's company. And that's exactly what's happening here. These are to be pleasing offerings, something, a little something that will bring pleasure. You see, the blood sacrifices is what does the work. All right, that pays the bill, if you want to put it like that, okay? But the grain, it brings some pleasure. Brings some pleasure to the Lord. And this grain offering is to be offered every time you offer a lamb, every time you offer a bull, every time the blood is shed. Accompanying that offering, accompanying that sacrifice is the mincha, which just comes alongside it. Something just to sweeten it all. Something to give the Lord pleasure. Bread. That's nice. That's a nice thing to do. If you've been around somebody's house, you take a loaf of bread. That's quite a nice thing as well, isn't it? Taking a loaf of bread, giving somebody a loaf of bread, especially if you've baked it yourself. It's smashing, isn't it? Really nice. Is there any smell like the smell of freshly baked bread? It is wonderful, isn't it? Yes? A pleasing aroma, bringing pleasure to the Lord, right? You know, some people say about this, well, it's all well and good, this is in the Middle East, but what about in the Far East where people have rice and stuff like this? This is a little digression, so forgive me for a moment. But when I go to the assembly, one of the wind-ups I do with the kids there, because I've got sort of 60, 80 kids sitting down there, and I say to them, will you please tell me what your favorite food is, please? And they all put their hands up, and it's one's lasagna, and another person, I don't know what, pizza or whatever. People come up with various different things. I said, no, it's not. It's not your favorite food. I know what every single one of you's favorite food is. And they go, no, you don't. And I said, I do. I tell you what you all love, because it's the thing you eat the most. You eat it practically every single day. And that tells me it must be a favorite, because you eat it all the time. You all eat grass. You eat grass all the time. Like, oh, I know, I've probably said that here before. But if you think about it, wheat and barley and rice, I mean, basically it's just grass, isn't it? It's the seeds on the top of the grasses that grow in different parts of the world. And you take the seeds and you grind them down into this powder, and from that we get our bread and we get our pastas and semolinas and all the rest of it. It's basically the staff of life. Basically, we all eat grass most of the time, don't we? We're no different to the sheep. You didn't know that, did you? It's the most basic form of nutrition. It's the staff of life. And whatever people call it around the world, it's our bread, isn't it? It's our bread. It's the fundaments. It's the rudiments of life. The most ordinary thing in life. So if you like, if the blood shed in the sacrifice speaks of the death in our place, then that comes alive. It's a pleasing life. A pleasing death and a pleasing life. It's all part of our worship, isn't it? It's all part of our worship. It's interesting, you won't, I'm sure many of you already got there, but Jesus speaking, he often identified himself in different ways. I am, I am, I am, I am, I am the bread of life. I'm the bread of life. Jesus is the bread of life. This mincha, this pleasing life offered up to God. This remarkable life, this wonderful life that brings God such pleasure. Perfectly blended, oiled and spiced and flavorsome. I mean, you try to identify, you try to find, do you ever play this game? We play this in the car sometimes, but where you sort of, you have to think of a person, but you have to think of attributes. So if you were an animal, what kind of animal would you be? And you sort of, somebody will say a monkey, and you think, oh, it must be Jacob, you know, sort of thing. So you sort of like carry on like this. If you're trying to think of a food, a substance that makes you think of Jesus, you know, his description, I'm the bread of life, wholesome, pure, fine, flavorsome, pleasing to the Lord. Pleasing to the Lord. And then you think about Jesus on the night he was betrayed. And again, identifying himself with the bread, doesn't he? He takes the bread, and then in that heartbreaking moment, he breaks it. It's over. But it's funny, isn't it, when the bread, you know what it's like when you've got a loaf of bread and you break it out, and the aroma comes out, doesn't it? You can smell it. He takes it and says, this is my body. This is my body. Jesus, the bread of life. Broken bread. Broken bread. And of course the church has been crucial, instrumental in the life of the church. Broken bread. Because it speaks of the body of Christ. Which is what we are, isn't it? Yes? The salt of the earth. Bread of life. And he breaks it and he shares it. He shares out his body, doesn't he? It's nutritious. It does you good. Jesus does you good, doesn't he? He gives you life. He gives you life. Wonderful. Great stuff. See, in this passage in Leviticus, what we're looking at, if you will, it's kind of funny talking about it like this, we're looking at holy bread. And by holy bread, I mean it's the bread that the Lord specifically desires and purposes for himself, which he wants set apart for himself. The bread he desires. Fine, salty, spiced, with oil, and unleavened. There are all those sort of headlines there, all the way through, the specifics of the bread. Because God is interested in the simple things of life, isn't he? Even the simple things of life. He's interested in bread. He's interested in the grass. I mean, this is the God who made the open savannas and the steppes and the fields that go on for miles. Who is there anybody here who sees anything in the world as beautiful? Is there anything as beautiful as seeing massive fields of corn just blowing in the wind? Is there anything like it in the whole wide world? I mean, it's as good and as beautiful as anything you'll ever see in all your life, isn't it? He's interested in the simple, in grass, in bread, in life. He's interested in life. He made it. He loves it. He loves it. The simple, humdrum, everyday things that people take for granted. I suppose that's part of the function of grace, isn't it? Is that you actually stop for a moment and just go, God, you're amazing. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for bread. The Hebrew language has two words for bread. And the first word, the most dominant word, the word you get used most often, and you'll be familiar with it, is the word lechem. Right? You need a cold to say it. Okay? Lechem. And lechem is the word that you encounter first. When you read through the Bible from the beginning, the first time you get bread mentioned, which you'll all immediately be turning to Genesis chapter 14 and verse 18, and you'll see Melchizedek, Salem's priest and king, coming out with lechem and wine, bread and wine, to sustain Abraham after his difficult journey. Lechem. But lechem, when it gets translated all the way through the Bible, is translated in all sorts of different ways. It's not always translated as bread, as in, you know, grain. It can just be food. If somebody brings out a meal for you, it can be lechem. Because quite simply, the idea of a meal without bread in it is like, I don't know what. I can't think of an example, but like that anyway. Is that unlikely or impossible? The whole idea. So, the reason you'll have heard of it, because you all know where Jesus was born. Jesus was born in Bethlehem, the house of bread, right? That's the place. It's the storehouse. It doesn't mean that that's where they stored just grain. It's where the food stores were kept. It was a granary and all the things and all various victuals of life, the substance of life, that's basically out because it was out in the fields and people brought the grain in and everything else. It's a storehouse, Bethlehem. But the second time we encounter the word bread in the Bible, and that's, you'll all be there already, chapter 19 and verse 3 of the book of Genesis. This time, it's the angel of the Lord appearing at the tent of Abraham with two accompany angels with him. Do you remember they came and they ate with Abraham and he prepared the fatted calf and he also brought out bread? But that word is not lechem. That word is matzah. All right? Matzah. So you have these two different words. You've got lechem, the general term, and matzah, which is a specific term describing a particular kind of bread. Going to do a whistle-stop tour through Genesis and Exodus now. All right, various examples of bread. We've talked about Melchizedek and bread. We've talked about the visit of the angel to the tent of Abraham and bread. Then there's Jacob feeding Esau. That's lechem. It's a meal. It doesn't specify what kind of bread it is or what kind of food it is. Rachel feeds her husband Isaac lechem as well. We don't know exactly what it was, but it was broadly bread. And then the Egyptian baker in the prison with Joseph, lechem again. And then there was bread that Joseph sent Jacob, his starving father, back up in Canaan on the back of a donkey. That was lechem. All manner of provisions, what he needed, what would sustain him, what would fill him, and all these sort of things. And if one wanted to know whether the lechem that's been describing there was in fact matzah, there's only one way you could tell the difference. And that is, how long does it take to make it, and how long will it last? Because the difference between matzah, this is essential stuff, isn't it, Carol? We need to know this stuff, right? The difference between lechem and matzah is this. Lechem, if you're making bread in the sort of risen loaf time, it takes quite a long time to prepare, doesn't it? Because you've got to let it rise. Yes? But matzah, it's so quick. This is the fast food of the ancient Near East. You can bang up some matzah in no time at all because you don't have to let it rise. You literally just mix the stuff together, bang, 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 inside the kiln, 2 minutes, it's done. You've got a meal. And when the angel of the Lord came to the tent of Abraham, do you remember? So he said, quick, go and kill the fatted calf and prepare some matzah because their guests are here already. And the other thing about matzah is because it's salty as well, whereas ordinary bread, as I noticed when I came back from my holiday and opened my bread bin and I found the loaf that I'd forgotten in there while I was away, and it crawled out and walked out all on its own, that's the yeast, isn't it? It's the yeast that corrupts. But if I left some matzah in my bin, it would just be sitting there whistling the same song as when I left it there. Because it's salty, it's unleavened, and you can carry it, and it won't go off, and you can keep it, and it lasts. So when we get to the book of Exodus, you're not surprised to find out that when God comes to his children, Israel, and decides to save them en masse and rescue them, what is he going to put in their panniers? What's he going to put in their packed lunch? It's not going to be lechem in the broadest. He's going to serve them matzah, isn't it? Because they've got to go. Because when God speaks, you've got to answer. There's no time to sit back and prepare a long, leisurely meal and think about it and dwell on it. God speaking, come on. Matzah, matzah. And the journey is not going to be for 5 minutes. You're going out into the wilderness. They're going for 40 years. You're going to need something that is going to last, that can sustain you and keep you in the years to come, but that you can take now. Because that's the Christian life, isn't it? I love that. Don't you just love that when Peter is sitting there by the lake, Lake Galilee, and the others, they're sitting there fishing, there, holding their nets and all this, and Jesus comes along and he just says, follow me. And what do we read? And they got up and they left. If they were saying, well, I've just got to prepare some lechem, I tell you, they'd have missed it. But if they wanted to take some matzah, they probably had time. And they could just go and follow the Lord. And they didn't know how long the journey would be, but if they had matzah, it would keep them going. They'd have something to keep them going for the duration. Do you see the point? Do you see the significance? And so in the Passover, that's what they have. It's matzah. The festival of the Passover is a fast food festival, if you want to put it like that, which is why I put it down in the news sheet as fast food. It is just fast food. Because when God calls, when God moves, when God prompts, it's time to go. If he says it, let's respond. That's the message, isn't it? And yes, God sent bread from heaven in the wilderness, because who was here on Tuesday night and we were looking at the Google Earth overview of the Sinai Peninsula? There's not a lot, right, of grain growing out there in the Sinai Desert. Okay, when you're out there, you're not going to be able to cultivate and grow things and be at leisure and prepare your meals and things like that. You want to get into the desert and get out of the desert as soon as you humanly speakingly can. You're going to be on the move, on the go, 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 go. Yes? To get out the other side, following the Lord, because you want to get back out to the other side, to the land that Moses was telling them about. And I know we characterize the land of promise as the land of milk and honey, but for example, in Deuteronomy, it's described as the land of bread. Because that's one of the things, they out there in the wilderness, the one, do you enjoy bread? Do you like bread? It's great, isn't it? For 40 years, we read in Deuteronomy, they had no bread and no wine. Deuteronomy 29, verse 6. For a whole generation, they had no bread. There was no bread. There was no lechem. They were fasting out there for years and years and years. And the bread that they did have, the lechem they did have, was this manna that came down out of heaven. And they complained about that. In fact, there's one verse that says in Numbers 21, verse 5, we hate this lechem. They got so sick of it. They hated it. Because it just, there's nothing like bread. There was nothing like bread. And the only actual real bread that there was in the wilderness at all, it was in such short supply. The only bread that was, do you know where it was? Do you know where it was presented, where it was kept? Every single week there had to be presented bread in the house of the Lord. Do you remember when they built the tabernacle, there was that table, and in the presence of the Lord, there always had to be bread, didn't they? Do you remember this? And it's written, the Hebrew translation of the bread that was placed there in the tabernacle was matzah lechem. Matzah lechem. That was going to be kept before the Lord. It became so scarce, so precious, so rare. Maybe that's why Moses had to say to them, you shall not live by bread alone. All you talk about is bread, 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 bread. What about God, God, God? What about where we're going? What about who we are? What about what he's done for us? Can we just... That's what fasting does. When was the last time any of you fasted? You know what fasting is like? It just, all you ended up thinking about is bread, 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 isn't it? Bread, bread, bread. I just want some bread. A piece of toast. Lord, can I just have a piece of toast? The whole purpose of fasting is, no, isn't it? You afflict your soul so you think about God. Why am I not eating? Because of God, God, God. To to focus on God, to train myself, to discipline myself, to ready myself, to serve God and to be instant when he speaks. In one sense, this matzah, this very humble bread out there in the wilderness was a kind of fasting. They were fasting from the ordinary pleasures of life. And I think being a Christian is a bit like that. You know, you see the people around you and they, for you, a glass of wine is what the Lord has granted you, for example. Maybe it does, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But it seems like somebody else there can drink two or three bottles. But that's their call, that's their walk. That's not you. Because the Lord has got you walking closely with him and he has certain expectations of the way you live your life. Don't be drunk with wine, for example. Like that. People do all sorts of things in this world. They indulge themselves in all sorts of ways, don't they? You could enjoy all those things in their right place and in their proper measures, but you're under constraint, aren't you? And matzah is a bit like that. I'm just going on and on about this word, aren't I? Because as they were out there in the wilderness, the desert wasn't going to give them any bread, and their enemies weren't going to give them any bread. But when they eventually arrived in the promised land in the book of Joshua, chapter 5 and verse 11, the first thing they did was go out into the fields and take some of the grain from the fields. And we read that they made bread. And they could easily have taken it easy at that point and made themselves a nice risen loaf. But they didn't. They all made matzah. And they just remembered, even at that point, where they'd come from, what they'd been through, and how all these things mattered. Why I'm saying all these things, because every single one of these offerings all the way through in Leviticus 2, was given to Israel long after they came into the land, when they were a land of plenty, and they could bring their great big fat loaves if they had them in abundance. But what pleased the Lord would if they would just bring the matzahs to remind him that they remembered where they'd come from and how he'd saved them and the good things that he'd done for them, and to bring an offering before him that pleased him, acknowledged him, salty, unleavened, immediate, ready to respond with oil, incensed, simple, scarce in the desert and abundant in the land. Bit half-baked tonight. My blessed thoughts. So, should we sing Bread of Heaven?